All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're going to be talking about the news coming out of the scouting combine, talking about Austin Hooper, Devondre Campbell, Wes Schweitzer, and Tack McKinley's futures.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I am on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast here on the Locked On Falcons Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode, we're going to be parsing through the news that had, you know, Falcons Twitter, Falcons media, all a Twitter on Tuesday with the press conferences from Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. We know that at the scouting combine, for the most part, all 32 GMs, all 32 head coaches sort of get up at the podium, get to talk with the local, you know, their local media that's on hand in Indianapolis, as well as the national media. And that creates headlines, and that gives an opportunity for, you know, media people and us as fans to sort of parse out what is expected out of some of these teams, how they view certain players. And we found out how the Falcons are planning on proceeding with Austin Hooper and Devondre Campbell and Wes Schweitzer being able to test free agency. We had some confusion about what is the status for Tack McKinley in regards to that fifth-year option that the Falcons are going to have to decide whether to or not to exercise at some point in the next couple of months. So those are the topics that we're going to hit up on today. But let's first sort of jump into that lead story talking about sort of those three guys being allowed to test the market. So Falcons GM Thomas Dimitroff stated at his press conference in front of national and local media on Tuesday at the scouting combine in Indianapolis that the team is prepared to allow three of their top free agents in tight end Austin Hooper, linebacker Devondre Campbell, and offensive lineman Wes Schweitzer to test the market. All three players are draft picks from the team's 2016 draft class and had their contracts expire at the end of the 2019 season. Hooper is coming off his second consecutive Pro Bowl season, while Campbell has led the Falcons in tackles for the second consecutive year in 2019. Schweitzer has been a steady contributor up front for the team, starting 36 games over the past three seasons combined at both left and right guard, as well as filling in during emergencies at the center position whenever starter Alex Mack has been nicked up. These decisions by the Falcons are certainly not altogether unexpected given the tightness of their salary cap situation and the fact that all three players stand to receive significant raises if they hit the open market. Recent projections from various cap experts like CBS Sports' Joe Corey, a former player agent, have projected that Hooper will command as much as $12 million a year when he hits free agency come March. There are no specific projections for Campbell such as that, but given some of the recent contracts handed out to comparable off-ball linebackers, it would not be completely shocking to see him get a figure that approaches eight figures from another NFL team. Schweitzer could be paid to be a starter or a high-end backup, which would be a considerable raise from the rookie contract and something that the Falcons may not be able to afford given the money that they spent last offseason to bring in free agents Jamon Brown and James Carpenter, who are currently set to combine to count nearly $12 million against the team's 2020 salary cap. Thomas Dimitroff indicated that the team is still very open to re-signing all three players and will continue to negotiate deals over the next 3 weeks before free agency kicks off on March 18th. Per the Falcons GM, the team is prepared to let the market help gauge what those players' respective values are, and the Falcons need to be smart about how they approach their salary cap situation in the immediate future. Certainly, there's not a lot of optimism that the Falcons will be able to retain all of those guys, which could create significant holes that the team will be forced to fill at the tight end and linebacker spots especially, and somehow the Falcons will have to find a way to fill those either via free agency or the draft. So we will continue to talk about Hooper and at least trying to understand the logic of why the Falcons are letting him test the market, and maybe dispelling some of the misconceptions out there, as I often do on this podcast. But I think you guys should definitely check out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, one of the three daily draft-related podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find Trevor and Ben Solak's thoughts on all things Combine. Find that podcast on your favorite Locked On Podcast Network platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So when we talk about the prospect of letting Hooper walk, you know, the first thing I want to say is I think the idea that losing Hooper is insignificant or he's easily replaceable, that a lot of people have been putting out those takes, particularly in our fan base, is an especially bad take. I think the idea that anybody can come in and do what Hooper has done is a pretty bad take. Toy Lolo didn't do that. Tammy didn't do that. Graham didn't do that this past year. And so the idea that, you know, the drop off between Hooper and a replacement level tight end is pretty insignificant, I think is pretty silly. Now, certainly there will be options that will be above replacement level that the Falcons could wind up signing or drafting this offseason. And so if you're optimistic that the Falcons will be able to land one of those players, then by all means, I'm not going to dispel you of that optimism, but, you know, despite that optimism, remember that the Falcons were very close to signing Ed Dixon, very close to signing Lance Kendricks in previous off seasons. Haven't been that successful when it's come to evaluating the tight end position, as Toy Lolo and Luke Stocker have indicated over the last couple of years, Logan Paulson being another one. So certainly, you know, again, in a vacuum, the optimism, I think, makes sense, but given the context of how the Falcons have made decisions at the tight end position, basically ever since they traded for Tony Gonzalez and or drafted Austin Hooper, it isn't necessarily a who's who of great, smart decisions. That being said, I don't think it's a bad decision to let Hooper test the market. I think, understandably, the Falcons have to sort of set a price for Hooper, you know, and he's worth X to them. And, you know, to some people, the X equals $8 million. To some people, X equals $10 million, like myself. Other people, X equals more than $10 million. Whatever that specific figure, whatever X means to you, is kind of irrelevant. But you know that there has to be a sort of price that they have to set. And it's certainly possible that whatever that figure is, Hooper could go over that if he hits the market. And as I discussed on Twitter on Tuesday, if you're in the Falcons' shoes, it behooves you not to necessarily come out of the gate and pay whatever X plus one is in that case. You know, if you're the Falcons and they have a similar mindset as I do and think, OK, well, Hooper's worth $10 million, you know, at the end of the day. But, you know, we're not going to come out of the gates and offer him $10 million. I mean, if we can get him for less than $10 million, of course, we're going to try to. So, you know, because it's a negotiation, you come out with your initial offer and it's like, hey, here's $9 million. And of course, Austin Hooper and his representation would be like, $9 million. They're going to scoff at that. And they're like, no, you know, we've been hearing the same buzz that you've been hearing. We know that there's a bunch of tight end needy teams that have money to burn this offseason. And we think there's a pretty good chance that we can get some of those teams like Washington, like Jacksonville, like New England, potentially into a bidding war. And that could lead to one of those teams offering my client $12 million or more, as some of the projections suggest. So, of course, the Falcons, when they hear that from the response, you know, and all this is hypothetical, but to illustrate a point, you know, they hear that response from the Hooper's representation. Of course, they're going to be like, OK, well, if you can get 12, then get 12, because we're not going to pay 12. And so you're the Falcons. You kind of have to let that happen to see what that limit is. And so, you know, you tell him, OK, like if you think you can get 12 on the open market, then by all means, you're free to try to do so. But at the very least, regardless of what offer you get before you decide on making that final decision, at least, you know, text us, call us or whatever the case may be, because we might be willing to match it. So, you know, if you want to be here, and every indication indicates that Austin Hooper does want to be here, and I'm sure his representatives would love to get a deal done, you know, they get that 3% cut, whether they sign with the Falcons or whether they sign with, you know, whoever. Although, you know, I don't know how taxes figure that. So if they do sign with Jacksonville, maybe the agents do get a bigger cut there. But regardless of that, so you, if you're the Falcons, it makes sense to let him test the market given those circumstances. And so if the best offer that they actually get and the projections are wrong and Hooper's market isn't as good as people are projecting it, and they say, you know, their best offer is $10 million, $10.5 million. If you're the Falcons and they call you back, you're like, okay, maybe you're in a position to match that. Maybe it's worth it to you to go over that $9 million figure, that $10 million figure slightly in order to match that. But if they call back and that figure is at $11 million, $11.5 million or more, then understandably, I think the Falcons are justified in their position to let him walk. So in the Falcons case, it makes perfect sense to let him test the market, because if he's going to get 11, 12, 13 or more million dollars, then I don't think the Falcons can really smartly say like, well, it was definitely worth us to pay that type of money. But all that being said, you know, it is understandable and understandable why people are frustrated. You know, after all, I'm sitting here explaining to you, it is a business, that old cliche, but you know, I think a lot of the frustration seems to be coming from because the Falcons made a bunch of boneheaded decisions last offseason. It's like, how do these two things, you know, match up together? You know, we saw last year they cut Matt Bryant. They let Marvin Hall walk. They let Brian Poole walk the pinch pennies, you know, and all of that was the pinch pennies so that they could justify paying out Vic Beasley's nearly $13 million fifth-year option, that they spent significant money on guys like Sambrelo and Brown at the outset and Carpenter at the outset of free agency. And objectively, you can sit there and say, like, all of those moves are bad. And so you come from the place of, like, you know, if the team was willing to do all that, why would they be willing to let one of their best young players, all in the hopes that they can get a compensatory pick next year, which they might not even get if they go out and spend, you know, a comparable amount of money on a pass rusher like people think they will. So you're going to basically lose Hooper for the price of nothing. And again, as I said, all those previous moves were bad. And so two wrongs don't make a right, guys. And it's not to sit here and say that keeping Hooper is a wrong, because I don't think it is. But you have to be smarter than what you were a year ago. And pinching pennies last year to justify keeping Beasley was objectively bad. And they're not doing the same with Schaub. And they're underspendingly not going to overpay Hooper at the outset, overpay Campbell, overpay Schweitzer, like they arguably did guys like Vic and Sambrelo in-house options last offseason. But when you look at these moves objectively without sort of the context of the boneheaded decisions that they made in 2019, these aren't bad decisions. Keeping Schaub, letting these guys test the open market. And so I would warn people, don't let their bad decisions last offseason be the basis on which you judge this year's moves. And so the last point I'll make about Hooper before we move on and talk a little bit more about Tack McKinley is this whole notion that I've seen so many people, you know, be very frustrated about in terms of the Falcons' decision to not trade Hooper at the trade deadline, because the various rumors suggest that the Patriots initially called the Falcons to trade for Hooper and then ultimately settled. They were talked into taking Sanu. You know, one man's trash is another team's treasure. Although I don't think he was the Patriots' treasure, but I'm sure plenty of people think he was the Falcons' treasure. But anyway, that's I'm not going to get into a Sanu thing. So I went on this rant before, right after the trade deadline, when everybody was like, how can they not trade Devontae Freeman? So I won't go as deep on that rant because that was an entire episode. So I'll just spend like 5 minutes ranting about it. So I won't go as deep on that one. But to me, the idea that suggesting that this regime, the idea that so many people like, they need to fire this regime and this is gross incompetence, that this regime deserves to be fired because they didn't have the omniscience back in October to know that Hooper was going to walk or that Freeman might get cut later this offseason and didn't pull the trigger on proposed trades back then, to me, that's a dumb take. That's the dumbest take I've ever heard. You know, people are literally saying that Dimitroff and Quinn deserve to be fired because they did everything in their power not to get fired back in October. Imagine if someone came to you and said that your bosses are evaluating your recent job performance, and for the good of the outside investors of the company, you should completely tank your job so it's much easier for us to fire you so that we can hire someone else that can do your job better, cheaper, whatever. Now, I'm sure there's some people listening to this and saying, you know, I would take that because you guys hate your job and you're looking for any excuse to get out of your job. And you're like, oh, I'll take my job, whatever. But for the vast majority of people, you understandably have responsibilities. You have to bring home that bread. You have to bring home that bacon. You have to put lights, you know, keep the lights on, support a family, whatever the case may be. And so in this analogy where you're Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, this isn't a job that you hate. This is a job that you spent your entire lives in working toward. This is a passion. This is a dream of yours. And so someone to sit here and come to you and say, after decades of hard work that you've been putting in and doing the best of your abilities to do your job every day for the rest of your life, you're not going to sit there and just be like, oh, yeah, well, I'll just take the job, just so some outside investors can feel better. And this is not even a clean analogy because outside investors actually have a financial stake in this company, in this metaphorical company that we're talking about. Fans don't. You have an emotional stake, but you're not, you know, whether the Falcons win or lose, you're not going to have to uproot your family, your wife, your kids, move across the country or anything like that. And so this notion that people have that they should get fired because they didn't try hard enough to lose is stupid. It's stupid, guys. You can believe all you want about tanking and the value of tanking, whatever. There's no harm in you believing in the value of tanking because you don't have any stake. You don't have any skin in the game. They do. And so people getting mad at these guys for doing, you know, or getting mad at anybody for doing what's in their best interest, and winning football games was in their best interest back during the trade deadline, and trading away your leading rusher, trading away what was at that point in the year your leading receiver, just so that you can coop what, a second or third round pick that you're probably not going to be able to use, a fourth, fifth, sixth round pick that you're probably not going to get the opportunity to use. And seeing like they should be fired because they did what was in their best interest. And how dare they? How dare a human being do what's objectively and obviously in their best interest? That to me is a stupid take. So again, you can be upset. You can be mad that the Falcons didn't trade the thing, because in your secret dreams, in your fantasy world where you have no stake in this, by all means, it is in the best interest of you, a fan, for the team to recoup those picks and whatnot. But in the interest of the people that have skin in the game, that their jobs are on the line, that their families are on the line, to sit there and be critical of them for not doing a thing that clearly is against their interest, to me is ridiculous. So there's the end of my rant, guys. We'll continue and conclude today's podcast and talk about the sort of confusing words that we heard about whether or not the Falcons are going to extend the fifth-year option for Tack McKinley coming up. But I already plugged the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. It is Combine Week. I will plug the other two podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network that are draft related. The Draft Dudes podcast, the Locked On College Football podcast, all of those guys, Draft Dudes, Kyle Krabs, Joe Marino, Locked On College Football, Jonah Tulls, Jordan Reed, they're all there in Indianapolis giving you their thoughts. Check out those podcasts on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So we had some confusion when it came down to whether or not the Falcons are planning on or going to extend the fifth-year option for Tack McKinley at some point this offseason. Officially, the final word is that the Falcons are quote-unquote still deciding whether or not to extend that option. But I kind of think Dan Quinn kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit prematurely. So at the press conference today on Tuesday, Thomas Dimitroff went first. Dan Quinn followed up shortly thereafter, and Dimitroff's official statement was that they're still deciding. Then Dan Quinn goes up. He asks the question. They ask him, hey, are you close to a decision about Tack McKinley, picking up Tack McKinley's fifth-year option? Dan Quinn says yes. So then the follow-up question is, so are you going to? Dan Quinn says no. No, and to get clarity, no, you're not going to? Dan Quinn says correct. So that seems pretty clear-cut, but when informed later on what Thomas Dimitroff had said, Dan Quinn walked it back and said that, oh no, we're still deciding, and I misinterpreted the question. Sure you did, Dan. Now, the Falcons have until May 4th to when they're quote unquote still deciding. They'll still deciding, although I did see one calendar that said May 30th, so I'll get some clarity on that. But most of the official calendars are saying May 4th. For some reason, MiamiDolphins.com had it May 30th. So it makes sense that the Falcons are quote unquote still deciding, because they basically have the better part of what, like two and a half months to make that decision. But I still kind of think, you know, we've seen in previous years, whether it was Jake Matthews or Desmond Trufant or Keanu Neal or Vic Beasley, when, you know, in previous combines, when previous outset of offseason, when people were asked about the fifth year option for those guys, they came out right away and said, yeah, we're going to extend it, and then ultimately did. This is the first time really since the new CBA was signed back in 2011 and you had the option of extending fifth year options starting with Julio Jones. This is the first time that the Falcons have been on the fence about it. So that leads me to believe that what Dan Quinn said was actually correct and that they aren't going to do it. But technically, again, they'll play it by ear. Maybe something happens in the next 2.5 months that changes their mind or something like that. So the issue is the fifth year option, and we don't know exactly. We got to figure out what the CBA and what the salary cap is officially going to be, and we probably won't find out that until another week or two. But from all the estimations I've seen and projections I've seen, it'll be somewhere in the $10 million range. Right? $9 million, $11 million, something, you know, plus or minus a million or so. And the issue is, as we've discussed with the same issue with Keanu Neal, that fifth year option is guaranteed for injury. So the minute they extend it, it's guaranteed for injury. So this May, by this May, that 2021 salary becomes guaranteed for injury. And what that means is if Tack McKinley gets hurt in 2020, the Falcons are going to be fully on the hook for that $10 million or whatever that figure is after the season, just like they are currently with Keanu Neal's fifth-year option. That's why when you hear the things about people saying, oh, the Falcons can get out of Keanu Neal's fifth-year option, I don't think they can. Now, maybe I completely misunderstand how the rule works, but I'm like 96% certain that that is the case. So given the fact that Tack McKinley has been dinged up quite a bit over the first 3 years of his NFL career, I understand makes – you know, it makes a ton of sense for the Falcons to not, quote unquote, risk being on the hook for an injured player. So the issue is going to be if Tack balls out this year, then I certainly see the Falcons after the season giving him extension. Now, here's the rub. Now, if you look back at the history of guys that have been declined their fifth year options, at least from 2013 to 2015, I didn't go back and look at 2011, 2012. Just because I didn't have enough time to Google that before jumping on this podcast. But from my extensive research from 2013 to 2015, 29 of those first round picks had their options declined. And that doesn't count guys like, say, Johnny Football, who were dumped before the team had the opportunity to make that choice. Only one out of those 29 guys that had his option declined was able to receive a long term extension from the same team that declined that option. And that was, you know, 2014's Kyle Fuller, the cornerback for the Chicago Bears. And now, you know, after the 2016 draft, there were 12 guys that from the 2016 first round that had their options declined last offseason, and all 12 of those guys are expected to hit the open market. We'll see if guys like Jack Conklin, Shaq Lawson, Jermaine Ifedi, Artie Burns ultimately get new deals from their current deals. But it, at this point in time, it seems, you know, sketchy at best and doubtful at worst. So based off of that precedent, it does seem like if the Falcons do wind up declining Tack's offer, the odds are against him from sacking the deal. But I do wonder that when you look at that list of guys, for the most part, I don't feel like those guys meet the standards. I do feel like there is some overlap between the situation that the Bears were in with Kyle Fuller and the situation that the Falcons are in with Tack McKinley. I think the number one reason why the Falcons will ultimately decline the option isn't because Tack McKinley has been a bad player like the vast majority of those other 28 guys besides Kyle Fuller. It's because, like Kyle Fuller, he was hurt. Now, Kyle Fuller came into the league in 2014, had two very promising years in Chicago, but then got hurt and missed the entire 2016 season. And after that 2016 season, they had to make the decision of extending the fifth-year option. They declined to do so given that injury history. So he played out that 2017 year, his fourth year, played well. And then the Bears, when his contract came up after 2017, the Bears slapped the transition tag on him. Right. Then the Green Bay Packers tried to swoop in and sign him to a big contract. And the way the transition tag works, for those of you that don't know, is it gives you a high figure and it basically allows players to hit the open market. But you don't get any compensation. If you're the Bears, if the Packers sign you to an offer sheet, the Bears have 7 days to match that offer. And if the Bears decide not to match that offer, then Kyle Fuller walks scot-free. They'll get no compensation. The difference is the franchise tag work is you get a first round pick or two first round picks or whatever the case may be. If you get signed away. But with the transition tag, you don't get that compensation. But the Bears had 7 days to match. Within 24 hours of the Packers swooping in and signing a deal with Kyle Fuller, they matched it. Kyle Fuller went on to have a Pro Bowl year in 2018. He went on to have another Pro Bowl year this past year in 2019 as an injury replacement for Jalen Ramsey. So it wasn't that the Bears were out on Kyle Fuller because they declined his offer. He had basically missed the entire previous season before they had to make the decision due to an injury, and they were concerned to be on the hook for a guy that had some injury concerns, and so they declined his offer. But he went out, played well, and they wound up giving him a long-term extension. So I think a similar thing could happen with Tack McKinley. And again, as I said, if I were to rattle off the other 28 guys that were, you know, drafted between 2013 and 2015, a lot of those guys were guys that certainly did not live up to those expectations, were certainly considered to be busts at that point when the team declined those offers. And again, contrary to the opinion of maybe some people out there, I don't think it's fair to consider Tack a bust. I think it's far too premature to close the book on Tack McKinley. So I do think there is a better than average chance than the odds, at least, you know, based off of those odds, you know, there's like a 3% chance that the Falcons extend Tack McKinley if they do wind up declining his offer based off of the history from 2013 to 2015. And that only goes lower if these 12 guys from 2016 hit the open market and sign elsewhere. But I do think it's more closer to 50-50 given it's more like the Kyle Fuller situation, because I think those are relatively rare cases where an injury really played a significant part on the team's decision to or not to pick up that option. So I wouldn't close the door on Tack McKinley just yet. I think, you know, this is going to be something to help motivate Tack McKinley to play better this upcoming season, coming off of this shoulder injury, the second shoulder surgery that he has now suffered in the past 3 years. So we'll just have to play it by ear. But certainly, you know, I wouldn't completely close the door on Tack McKinley getting a brand new contract. The Falcons will just have to play it by ear. Maybe we'll get into a situation like the Bears next offseason where there's like, okay, well, we'll give you the transition tag and we'll see, you know, allows you Tack to explore your market, see what the market is out there, and maybe we'll wind up matching or whatever the case may be. Any number of variables could occur between now and, you know, 12 over the next 12, 13 months before the Falcons have to sort of make that decision. And we'll just sort of have to see how it plays out. But I certainly am a little bit more optimistic than maybe the raw numbers suggest I should be, that Tack can stay long term here in Atlanta. So we'll see how that plays out. Tomorrow's episode, we will have a guest talking with us, his thoughts on some of these moves with the Falcons, his thoughts on another team that he covers, as well as his thoughts on the value of the combine, a popular guest that has been on this podcast many times, but is making his triumphant return after many, many months of not being on the show. I'm sure, you know, the few faithful out there might have a couple of guesses out there on who that person is, but I will just leave the tease and let your curiosity intrigue you and cause you to tune in to another episode of the Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I do want to say, guys, before we close out here, that if you listen to today's episode and came away being like, man, I don't feel satisfied. I didn't feel like I got all the answers. I didn't feel like I got Aaron's usual, you know, profound insights on all things Austin Hooper and Devondre Campbell and even Wes Schweitzer. Never was intended to be sort of the final word. It's just like, this is the sort of rapid reaction to this news. I always intended from the jump this offseason, when I was planning out my offseason schedule, that the first week of March, starting next Monday, was that I would devote a significant number of podcasts talking, you know, debating, going back and forth on the reasons to and not to keep guys like Hooper and Campbell and Beasley. And maybe we'll have to sort of shuffle sort of the strategies behind that now that we have a little bit more definitive answers on, you know, certain guys are likely to walk. But my plan all along was to sort of take a deeper look and sort of weigh the sort of the logic and the pros and cons of all these various things. So I hope no one listened to today's episode feeling like, oh, well, Aaron is pro the Falcons letting go of Austin Hooper, because that doesn't really cover sort of, I think it's a much more nuanced take. And so we'll get into that on next week's shows coming up. So don't feel like you're unsatisfied. It just, you know, we got content, we got 52 weeks, we got 200 plus shows of content that we got to fill. So I can't necessarily give it all out at once, particularly when we got two more weeks to build up to free agency before, you know, we get sort of definitive answers on the status of guys like Hooper and Campbell and Schweitzer, et cetera. So just wanted to let you guys know that if you didn't feel like you got all of it on today's episode, that there is more to come, specifically with Hooper and Campbell on the Locked On Falcons podcast.